Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. I'm your host, Amon Kusro, and I'm joined by my recently on his way to an event competitively and traveling co-host, Zach Cachetta. How's it going, my friend?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good. It's been a while.
It's been a tick, yeah. I mean, well, you know, holidays and work and stuff, it all gets in the way, but happy to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be back. And honestly, sometimes you need a break.
Yeah, sure.
And what better break, as you say, than during the holidays, New Year, reset, reframe, and come back and come back with a bang, if you will, or with a crit, rather. So, alas, here we are. In this episode, our esteemed listeners, we're going to be discussing a lot of things, actually. We're going to talk about some recent events that have happened. We're going to talk about current state of the meta, as per usual. And we're going to talk about LVO. Specifically, we're going to predict what we think the meta is going to look like at LVO. And kind of just talk about Underworlds in general, which we're pretty excited about. But before we do that, as per usual, we want to thank all of our patrons who help keep the lights on. Thank you to everyone who supports us. And if you are interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory. And if that's not possible, we still appreciate the listens and the ratings. So, Zach, I know that you said family and stuff, but what else have you been up to?
Just been playing some Kill Team, playing some Underworlds online with some friends. It's funny, I play online with local friends quite a bit just because we're all dads and it's much easier to use technology than it is to get an evening away from the little ones. So yeah, you know, it's been playing just various Underworlds, various Games Workshop stuff. I went to a Blood Bowl 7 tournament, just kind of been hopping around, playing some things, you know, being quite relaxed. How about yourself?
Yeah, I feel that, man. I have not played Underworlds at all, actually, since the Vassal League. And that's okay. I mean, I love Underworlds. I literally think about it almost every day. But it's just more so like, I've been really into the fact that my local scene has exploded in numerous ways. And one of my good friends, we've been friends since high school, which was, gosh, 12 years ago, almost 13 years ago.
Wow.
And yeah, and he ended up opening up a game store called The Forge Hobbies and Games. And it's been a huge success. I mean, it's two stories, huge space. And it's just been really fun to go there. And the manager there, his name's Dallas. And Dallas was like the Games Workshop manager of the first Games Workshop that me and my buddy Sam, who owns The Forge, like ran into each other. Like, we were both in high school and we're like, oh crap, is that someone else from our school? Like, no, they're gonna know that we do nerdy stuff, you know. And we ended up being cool about it, and that's kind of the reason why we became such good friends. Ended up living together during college as well. So yeah, it's been really fun to just kind of have everybody around and run into people that you hadn't seen in a long time, and with that comes just people playing different games. And so I've mentioned on the last podcast, I think I've been playing A Song of Ice and Fire. So the Martell faction has released, and I was like yay brown people, you know, I can so I was like, I'll play, you know. I mean, obviously, like, the cool thing about Game of Thrones, like the knights and the dragons and like the sirs and everything, but it was just sure. Cool to kind of see some sort of representation that was very obvious, and then unfortunately, it doesn't work out because, like, the Martell playstyle is, like, super control-y, super, like, wait for the right moment to strike, and it's just, like, sometimes I get impatient, but it's also, like, sometimes I know I should charge, but then if I don't, then I can't use a lot of my tactics, if you will.
I'm not familiar with the various factions in the game. Is there, like, a big delineation between the different factions and their playstyles?
Yeah. To be succinct, like, Baratheon and Starks, they're just trying to beat you up.
Right.
And then Starks have, like, Baratheons are more like attrition. So, like, the more damage they take, the I guess the more damage they can put out. You know, they're just like a really brawly, grindy faction. Mm. While Starks are like high leadership, hit hard, but then they're also low, like, you know, they're Northmen. They're not super heavily armored.
Right.
And then Lannisters are like pretty average all around, but it's like their politics and their tactics are really good. So they like can keep making you take leadership tests, and you can, when you fail a leadership test, you roll a D3, and then that's how many miniatures you lose from your regiment. So they can actually just make you take like 6 panic tests in a row, and you just start losing dudes, right? And the whole idea is like, it's not necessarily panic, but it's like maybe they're paying off your family or they're threatening you. So the soldiers no longer want to fight. Like, that's the narrative behind it.
Right.
You have like neutrals that can play for everything, which the House Bolton stuff is nuts. Everyone uses them. And then Targaryens, mostly cavalry because they're Dothraki. You can play Night's Watch, which is like pretty solid elite infantry. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then I think there's Martells, and I'm probably missing one or two, but oh yeah. And then there's Greyjoys, which are like, they can pop up on any board edge and they like hit hard, but they don't like last very long. They're more raiding, you know?
So, oh, like hit and run type stuff. That's cool.
Yeah. It's cool. It's a lot of fun. Everything comes pre-assembled and stuff, so you don't really have to do it. You just pop it out of the box and play, which is cool. And then I've been playing a lot of MCP. In fact, actually, it's really cool. I know we're an Underworlds podcast, but, you know, we're just catching up because we don't really get to... We haven't spoken much as ourselves as well, but...
Yeah, only a little bit online here and there.
Yeah. We're starting this thing called the Texas Gauntlet because, you know, Infinity Gauntlet. And so... Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Dallas, and I think Tyler just got added. There's a guy in Dallas named Ryan Cherubonga. He played a lot of War Machine back in the day. And he was like, hey, because we kept running into each other at like Lone Star Open or Games Expo. And we even had an event. We have an event in Houston every year called Warzone Houston. So he was like, hey, I want to do something. And then so he just grabbed all the people that he knew, I guess, or show up to the tournaments and travel. From every city. And so we put together a rubric, a format where everybody can compete. So not only can you compete for individual glory, but you can rep your city. So at the end of the year, which we're going to announce either this week or the week after LVO, because LVO is kind of the start of the MCP calendar year, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be one winner and then who has the most city points. So I was like talking to the Houston people, you know, I mean, we're pretty fractured because Houston's so large, but also people just like to play with their friends and stuff. But I'm trying to make everyone play together, mixed success. But I was like, hey, you should come up with like a team name. And then someone was like Gulf Coast Avengers, and it kind of stuck because you know how there's like West Coast Avengers and then right. There's like Great Lakes Avengers. But then someone was like, why is it Gulf Coast when it should be Third Coast? And I was like, dude, I don't know. I'm a big X-Men fan, right? Like, I love Cyclops. He's my favorite. He's a douche, though, so... Well, he's misunderstood. Anyways, they're called Uncanny X-Men. So I was like, I want to be the Uncanny Houstonians, you know, but nobody went for it.
Didn't
so.
Stick?
Nah. It was immediately rejected. I think people just ignored my suggestion, actually, in the group chat. So, yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing. It's hard juggling multiple games, though, I feel like.
It is, for sure.
How do you combat that, or how do you kind of deal with that?
I just try to focus on which ones are, well, for me, it's heavily around events. So events or leagues, whatever's coming up, I kind of focus on that one. But like, you know, for me, it's just kind of whatever I'm in the mood for. So our game night, our Tuesday nights at our local store called Grognard Games, wearing the shirt right now, Tuesday nights is GW Skirmish night. Like I just said, it's GW Specialist night. I show up, I bring Underworld's Kill Team, sometimes Warcry, sometimes Blood Bowl. Occasionally people have showed up with like Titanicus. Like two people have Titanicus stuff. I have never seen other people with it. But I did see somebody playing it once, which is more than I've ever seen someone playing it. You know, I'm just like, what? I'm like, if there's not an event coming up, it's kind of what I'm in the mood for. I just go, hey guys, I'm bringing Warcry. I really feel like just playing some Warcry, and usually somebody will be there with it. You know, our knights are heavily kill team, but I'm really lucky to have an area where people kind of have a little bit of everything, a desire to play things. I've demoed Underworlds a couple times. I've demoed Warcry a couple times. like I said, it's a lot of people kind of default back to Kill Team because that's kind of the big one around here right now. But I've done a lot of demos for other stuff, including like Blood Bowl and things. And, you know, it's just kind of like I try to be the guy who's pushing what I want to play. And sometimes that means I sit out and just do demos for other people. But sometimes that means I get to play other stuff. But unless there's an event coming up, like right now I'm getting ready for Vegas, where I'm playing Kill Team this time around. So I'm just playing a lot of Kill Team right now. But, you know, I think once that's over, after all my practice and going to the tournament, I'll probably show up to the store with a bit less sci-fi and a little bit more Underworlds and maybe Blood Bowl or something a little less crazy than that.
That's interesting. And I completely agree with that, right? Like, I think it's, you have to kind of just, you can't force it. I think a lot of times in my past, I've tried to force things.
Mm.
And that's when it leads to burnout. And so this time around, as like what you're doing, it seems like, is just playing what everyone else is playing, or playing that just gives me the most fun, where I don't really necessarily have to think. And you naturally start gravitating back to the stuff you love. Like very recently, I started gravitating back towards Underworlds. I've been more active in the Discords. Because, you know, it's like a... It's like gravity, right? Like, the best way to describe it is a gravitational... Well, it's magnetic. You just... It'll eventually drift back into and get sucked in, and then you just satellite around it until you don't want to, right? And then you just dip out, so... But did I hear that you're not playing Underworlds this weekend?
That's right. I was really up in the air. I was signed up for... Originally, I was signed up for Friday night Underworlds, and then Saturday, Sunday, Grand Clash for... Friday night, I was signed up for Kill Team. Saturday, Sunday, Underworlds. But I just, like, you know, after I played the Vassal League, I was a little burnt out, because that league... I don't know if it was just me, but I felt like that league just dragged a little bit. Maybe it was because it was all the Gnarlwood stuff and some of the teams I was playing, but just, like... I was not vibing with it. So I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to force myself to play this game. I'm not going to force myself to hardcore practice something that just I got burnt out on. And I just went full Kill Team, and we'll see what happens with Adepticon. You know, I've got my ticket and I can change things around, and I'm not really sure what I'm going to play that weekend.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You are not the only host on this podcast not playing Underworlds this weekend.
Oh, is that so? Who would the other one be?
I'm not playing. I qualified for the Marvel Crisis Protocol Invitational.
Oh, congratulations. That sounds awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it was hard. I had to play some very sweaty MCP, but managed to get enough points over the course of the year to where I made it. So I'm playing MCP this weekend. And it's the same reason. Really, it's not because I don't love Underworlds or any of those, you know, what people may assume. It's just because I got burnt out. I got burnt out of playing Hexbanes. I got burnt out of playing against Hexbanes and playing against GSP. And I got burnt out of just realizing that if I'm playing one of those two factions and my opponent is playing not one of those two factions, I'd most likely win the game.
Hmm.
And it just made it uninteresting, made it unfun. And I think a lot of that had to do with the Vassal League. I think not because it wasn't an amazing event. And I think we can both say shout out to the Vassal community, the members and participants of that league, and Beard Arm, of course, for running it. It has nothing to do with that. It's more so the matchups, the meta, the competitive game. And I feel like when you play against certain warbands and strategies, unless a lot of luck goes your way over multiple games, right? It can't just be like one game. It has to be, I have to kind of hope that you, I guess it's a Molog effect where it's like, I kind of have to hope that your dice don't work out sometimes.
It can be like that sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause when Crimson Kira is rolling six dice turn one, it just doesn't, it's like, what are you supposed to do?
No.
Scything, right?
Like the game is, it does feel very dicey right now. Like, either, it's like dicey in both directions. Like, some attacks are just like, or some factions are just like, I'm just rolling two hammers all the time, and that's it. I don't get to boost it. I don't get to reroll. And then, like, other factions are just, well, it doesn't matter, you know, why do we even roll the dice? We're rolling six against my one. And that's, you know, kind of what, you know, it feels like very stilted in a way. And I think a big part of that, I don't know if we're ready to get into talking about the meta, but I have thoughts about the meta.
Yeah. Well, let's hold off a little bit because we do have some things that I want to announce, or sure. at least. So in our Patreon Discord, which I know that Zach and I have been a little light on the participation, mm-hmm. which we want to thank the people who are contributing in that Discord server, because the conversations are popping every day, which we really appreciate. But there is something that I was told to, or requested rather, to present. And it looks like Triss is their server name. They asked if we could spread the word on the ETC, so European Team Championship / World Team Championship for Warhammer Underworlds.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in Germany this year. And I don't know if there's a date on here. Oh, it looks like it's going to be 27th through the 29th of May, 2023, in the Comic Bar, Hereford, Germany. 5-player teams, and they're looking to have 12 plus teams. You have to apply. I don't see why they wouldn't approve you, though. But they currently have Italy, Poland, France, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland are confirmed as of December. And they're looking forward to adding more. So, I'm not sure if Team USA can make it. I cannot this year. I'm getting married, and I have a honeymoon and all that stuff. And so, and then I have Adepticon, which is like third on the list, right? Yeah, that's where I'm prioritizing. But yeah, I mean, that sounds fun, right? Like, I've always wanted to go compete in that. It just never really worked out. And obviously, online is cool. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the fun of traveling to an event is the travel itself, right?
Right. I would agree with that. I mean, you know, and some events are easier to travel to than others. I mean, not all destinations mm-hmm. are made the same, honestly, you know.
No, I completely agree. Like, I know people who live on the Northeast who'll never go to LVO, right? I know people who live on the West Coast who'll never go to Nova. It just doesn't make sense to them. I guess we're spoiled because we live in the middle.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm spoiled because I have Adepticon literally right around the corner. You know, that's one of the biggest ones, and it's right there. And I lucked out this year with LVO. But, you know, I am a little jealous sometimes. I see people like posting about Bay Area Open and some of these other West Coast ones. And not only that, but like when it comes to the Kill Team community, there's a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, you know, we're hosting an LVO prep event, or, you know, we're hosting a, you know, just a 1-day Kill Team event here. And it's like every single weekend there's something going on. It's like, oh, I wonder where that one is. Oh, it's San Francisco. Cool. Yeah. You know, it's good to see people just playing games, and you know, wherever you are, wherever you've got a chance to play, just I think it's important to look out and find that community around you, wherever you can find it, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. Speaking of community and events, there's the Games Workshop announced the 2023 U.S. Open Series and World Championships of Warhammer. So, there's going to be 4 events this year, Kansas City, Tacoma, Tampa Bay, and Atlanta. And it looks like 2 of those events, it used to be 1, but it looks like they've updated this article. Tacoma in Seattle and Tampa Bay in Florida are going to both have Warhammer Underworlds, which is pretty exciting. Now, keep in mind, if you want to compete in the Grand Championships, you have to win one of the major events. You can submit and apply for a qualifier, but as of now, the article specifically mentions Nova, LVO, Adepticon, and then these 4 events. I'm sure there might be more added as time goes on, so keep a lookout, talk to your local communities, look for your local events, but I'm pretty excited, actually, because, and it's kind of the reason why I decided not to play in the LVO event, was because LVO is... it's going to have like less than 20 people for Underworlds, but like MCP is like, there's going to be like 100 people there, you know? So I kind of wanted to be a part of something that was going to be a little bit bigger, a little bit more like LVO is known for the MCP event, right?
Right.
In the last couple years, Whereas I can still go play my Warhammer at the Games Workshop events, which I'm very excited to go compete and play in. So it should be a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice that they added another one. I was a little bummed out because I think... Which one? It was only on one of these originally. Either
it was only at Tacoma at first.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they'd updated till I was just reading it live just now. So.
Yeah. Out of the three locations, which are you... Which one would you be interested in going to?
Oh, I'm going to go to Tacoma and Tampa Bay.
Oh, you're going to do both. Nice.
I'm going to do both. So nice. I know that Beard Arm and some of the Canadian guys are going to try to come down. So
for both of them?
It'll be nice to just meet them. Just Tacoma, because they live on the west side of Canada, center to west. And then Tampa, I don't know who's going to show up, but I'll be there. So
it might be a... Might be a lighter field for you. I mean, I've got a couple internet buddies that actually live in the Seattle area, so I might head out to Tacoma.
Let's do it.
Meet them. I'll see. I mean, I've already got Vegas, and I have a 2-year-old, so two domestic vacations in a year might be pushing it. But I don't know. Maybe by July, I'll want another break. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting. There's a lot of events coming up.
Yeah, for sure.
And continuing the train on events, there's been some events occurring at Warhammer World. Have you been keeping up with those on the Facebook and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I every time there's a one of those Rivals clashes, I know Nick's been doing a great job running and posting about those. I try to keep up with who's doing well, what teams are represented. I think they jump between Rivals and Nemesis, or it's like Rivals on... Thursday, Nemesis on Saturday, something like that. But I usually keep an eye on those. They seem really well attended, which is nice.
Yeah, the last one was on January 13th, and it had 60 players.
Dang. Good for them, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks really fun. I mean, obviously, you know, I think, again, I've said this many times now, I think the Warhammer World events are a bit of an anomaly, because it's literally Warhammer World, you know, and England is... Everything's like a 2-hour, like you can go from London to Manchester in 2 hours, which for those of you unfamiliar, it's like the north of England, like the north. I mean, maybe you're more English than I am. You probably know better, but it's north and south. It's quite far, right? And in the terms of the country,
in terms of
2-hour train ride is not bad.
Yeah. I mean, we went to visit the UK, for a trip before the pandemic. I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm from the Midwest, so for me, it's like, we go to visit my sister in Colorado, and I'm like, that's a 14-hour drive, I can do that, like, why would you ever take a plane? But there, you know, they're like, oh, 2 hours away? That's like an entire weekend trip, why would you, you know, what are you doing? So, it's about perspective. You can absolutely travel from London to the northern parts, up into, like, the Scotland area, and, like, pretty reasonable amount of time, but, I think it's perspective on like what people want to be doing with their time or how much they expect to spend traveling. So it's like, you know, for us, it'd be like, oh man, a 2-hour train ride, I could totally go do an event. But for some people, they'd be like, oh, that's too far, I'm not going to do that, you know? Eh. So it's funny. It's
so funny you say that because, yeah, no, 100%. Last weekend, I went Saturday morning, like four of us went up from Houston, drove to Austin, played in an MCP event. And then drove back home and got home at like 11, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, that was fun. Like, we should do that more often. You know, that was so easy. But my cousin lives in London. And so, and her cousin, which I'm not related to, it's her mom's side of the family, lives on the other side of London. And I'm like, and she's like, oh, you know, I never see her. And I was like, I'm just confused. Like, you live in the same city. Like, how do you not see somebody, you know? And she was like, well, she lives 30 minutes away. And I was like, excuse me? Like, I drive 30 minutes to go to the gym sometimes, you know? Like, I'm just confused.
My work commute used to be an hour and a half in either direction. So, I'm like, oh, yeah. That's, you know, 30 minutes. That's so convenient.
Yeah. So, well, anywho, getting back on track here. Looks like the event kind of had the similar breakdown, which we thought. Hexbane making 11% of the field and Gnarl Spirit making 8%. They were the most heavily represented with 7 and 5 respectively, and then Crimson Court, Wild Hunt, and Rippa Snarl Franks each had 3, and then every other warband was either featured twice or once. There were some warbands that were absent. Noticeably, the one that I noticed was Kanan's Reapers, which I feel like they're very popular and good, but they were not represented at the event. But we did have Garrick's Reavers, Iron Skulls Boys, and Chosen Axes, so who knows? And we had, there was Blade Coven too. Overall, this is what I find really interesting, and I'm really glad Nick kind of parses the data, because you can kind of see what Rivals decks are doing well. 45 players just decided to play their faction deck, which I think makes sense. Well, probably a lot of new players, low barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
And then the players who took additional decks, because I assume it's a Nemesis event, less than 10 per deck. Only one person took Illusory Might. One person took Daring Delvers. 0 took Deadly Depths. 6 Tooth and Claw. 7 Fearsome Fortress. What do you think that says about the Rivals decks and just the state of the Nemesis format in general? I know it's a small sample size, but I feel like it speaks volumes.
Yeah. Can you link? Do you have the image on that? Can you link that in the thing so I can take a look at it? I looked at it before, during the week or during the time. Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of people are just, you know, they picked up the faction. They're here to hang out. They're here to, you know, see what it's about. Because I think a big part of just playing your faction deck is also, it fits the theme, right? Like, you learn more about, I think, especially for new players, you learn more about what your faction does when you just play the faction deck, as opposed to, like, mixing in Rivals. Because, like, you know, you can play, what's a good example? You can play Gore Chosen, but then if you replace, like, mm-hmm. 2/3 of your cards with Fearsome Fortress, it, like, plays completely differently. Maybe not completely differently, but relatively differently. And I think if you're a new player and you're like, hey, what are these, you know, 3 corn dudes about? They were just, oh, just use your deck. You'll be fine. And you'll really get a feel of, like, what does the priest mechanic do? What do the prayer mechanics do? You know, what kind of cards are good with a Gore Hulk? How do I use Blood Tithe effectively? What do these cards kind of, like, do when they interact with each other? And I don't think you get as good of a feeling of that when you mix it with something else. So it's a good new player experience. But then also it's like a cheap new player experience, right? You don't have to go buy those extra decks. Maybe you're borrowing this faction, or maybe you have a Beastgrave faction. I couldn't remember the name. A Beastgrave or Direchasm faction sitting around. You haven't bought any of the new stuff yet. So that doesn't surprise me. What surprises me is how well they did. I mean, I would expect to see some more of these up in Tooth and Claw or Daring Delvers or Fearsome Fortress in the top 10, but we've only got a few here. And especially the winning faction being Yul'Thari's is, I mean, man, people poo-poo on Yul'Thari's a lot. I've been saying for literally years that there's something to that faction. I would not have put it with Tooth and Claw, but hey, I mean, if it works, it works, right? Go Tim.
If you're saying that you knew that Yul'Thari's Guardians was going to win event.
I didn't say
win in this event. Meta.
I
don't know.
I said for a very long time, I think Guardians are better than people give them credit for.
That's fair. I think it's really easy to, like, as you say, poo poo on a faction, right?
Yeah.
And the internet can kind of amplify the level of poo pooing and kind of exponentially increase it. So completely agree there. I really want to speak to Tim. I tried to find him on Discord. Couldn't do it. But I kind of wanted to ask him, like, did you just give Galligan an extra defense, bump him up to 3 with 2 rerolls and just say go? Like, what did you do, you know? Especially with Tooth and Claw, he must have played them aggressively, which I find very, very interesting. What I think is more interesting is that if someone asked me before this event started, and actually, let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Zach, if you know that there's a 60-man event happening at Warhammer World, 7 players taking
2
Hexbane's Hunters and 5 taking the Gnarl Spirit Pack, who do you think is going to win?
In this meta, probably Gore Chosen. No, but really, it's probably Hex Banes. I think Gorchos are up there for various reasons, but yeah, no. I mean, it's probably I put Hex Bane above it right now. Is how I'm personally reading the meta, but yeah, it would not have been outside of those two factions. As to your point, I assume is what you're trying to ask.
Well, yeah, I would have said GSP, right? That's just me. But the guy, the first place or the highest ranked GSP player was 17.
Really?
It's super interesting, right? Like, Hexbanes, you come in at 5th and 6th. Profiteers came in at 4th. Exile Den, shout out Zach, came to 3rd. And Mad Mob, which I think is always kind of up there, came in 2nd. So, I feel like all that makes sense except for Guardians. But hey, maybe Tim Lemon is onto something.
Maybe he knows something we don't, man.
Clearly. Well, good for him. Congrats to Tim.
Yeah. I mean, I would be interested. Part of me has a worry, and I don't want to call out anyone unnecessarily, because I don't know how people were playing. There's always a worry when it is new players that something was played incorrectly, because my first thought was you probably loaded up Galligan, but all the buffs in that Tooth and Claw deck are for range 1. I really hope he wasn't using Galligan's range 2 weapon with all the Tooth and Claw buffs, which I did the first time I played through a Tooth and Claw deck. I put it on... I put a bunch of stuff on Sarukar, and at the end of the game, I was like, wow, I can't use any of the stuff with his staff because I played it wrong the entire game. So I don't want to like point fingers and say that. I do hope that didn't happen. And I don't think anyone would have done it maliciously or anything like that. But I am curious.
I think to speak in favor of the players, I would say that if you're going to go undefeated, and win the whole thing, I would imagine that you would come across good players. I mean, looking at this list right now, names that I recognize, right? Tim Greaves, Patron, Orc Tim, you know, Rowan McGee, Jay Clare. I mean, Phil Kelly played at the event. Obviously, Nick Payton is like huge Underworlds fan. I imagine someone would have probably said something over the time.
That's fair. That's definitely fair.
And so I want to give Tim the full and his opponents the full benefit of the doubt, right? But you make an interesting point. Who knows? We weren't there, but super interesting.
The event seemed to go really well. I mean, obviously huge event and a good variety. I mean, you know, we can kind of hem and haw and not know what happened there. What the run was to get Eotharis to the top, who they faced, what their matchups were, what the dice were like. We don't know any of that, but just the fact that, like you said, you go undefeated with Eotharis at an event, like you were doing something right. Whatever Tim was doing, A-OK, man. You're killing it in my book.
Yeah, 100%. I just love to see factions, and I'm going to use your phrasing again, that have been poo-pooed on to kind of come back and swing things, and so... I'm very excited to see that because it gives me hope. Because I felt like and not to sound overly dramatic, but it just felt like, again, like the meta has been really stale and solved. And we'll talk about that in a second.
Sure.
But it's just refreshing, personally, just to see that there are pockets out there where it's a little different. We've got two more events I want to cover very quickly. Why don't you cover the Vassal League really quickly?
Just my experience are still going.
Just like signups, all that. Yeah.
Let me pull up the info here. Masses of the Underworlds. See, oh man, 14. Time does fly, huh? Well, we do have the Vassal League's coming up. For those of you who aren't aware, Vassal is an online tool that we use to play with people all around the world. Again, we always say we like to play in person. We like to support the game. We buy minis and stuff. But these online tools are great for playing people that you might not play or just for getting games in if you don't have a local scene. It is going to start on... registration should end by the end of this month. And the games will begin on January 30th. there will be 6 weeks of one match per week, and then they will go to a elimination bracket for the top 16 or 32 people, depending on how many signups we get. I participated in maybe not most, but a lot of the Vassal Leagues in the past. It's always a great time. There's a lot of amazing players in it. I really recommend that you guys check it out, sign up. Even if you don't think you can, you know, go all the way into the elimination bracket, people are always having a good time testing out stuff, trying new factions, or just, you know, getting back into the game. It's a good way to get a game in every week, especially if you don't have a local scene, like I said. So yeah, go ahead and check it out. I think as of right now, wow, there's a good amount of signups right now, if this list is correct. Seeing 2, 4, 6,
there's 8. There's a bunch, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot on here. So yeah, if you are looking for a good variety of people to play against, test things out, just sharpen your skills, I would definitely go online. If you don't have a connection to the Vassal League Discord, you could probably get one from our Path to Glory Discord, or there's some links around in various places like Reddit and stuff. Check it out. I think Iman and I... I just missed the elimination bracket last season. I know Iman got into it and got pretty far.
I lost the champ, so can't be too
bad. Yeah, that's... If you're going to lose to anyone, that would be the best one, right?
Yeah. I was top 8. Top 8.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, not too bad. With 36 people signed up already, which is pretty exciting to see.
Mm.
And I haven't signed up yet. Doesn't look like you have either. Doesn't look like the former champ has signed up either, so maybe they're still trickling in.
Oh, there's still plenty of time. We've all got until next week, end 29th. Of next week, 29th, yeah. I don't know what day it is today, because time is an illusion.
That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're interested in all at just playing some more games and, you know, playing with this community that we're always talking about, because I know we're always on here talking about the various Discords we're in, or the Vassal Discords we're in, or games we play in. I know not everybody is super familiar with those. So if you're ever interested in learning about them or kind of participating yourself, maybe you're a new player, maybe you're a returning player, it's a great way to jump back into it.
Completely, completely agree. Well, then, let us keep moving. The last event we're going to talk about is one that hasn't happened yet, and it's going to be in Zach's backyard. It's called Adepticon. It is the largest wargaming convention on the planet. Super exciting, a lot of fun. And interestingly enough, the U.S. Open had mentioned that every Grand Clash would be championship format. But then they quickly reneged on that, and they announced Adepticon. And the Adepticon Grand Clash is Nemesis format. So I thought that to be quite interesting. I would assume that the winner does get the qualification, so still very exciting. Still a lot of reason to go play. Right now, there are 28 people signed up as of 7:24 p.m. today, and there are a total of 72 seats. So looking like pretty solid. I'm assuming most of that is the Madison crew, so shout out to them. What do you think?
It's really interesting that they've decided to go Nemesis. I mean, it's not interesting in that it's like unexpected, because I think we all know that Nemesis is, GW is excited for it. It is more accessible. We talk about accessibility a lot. It is more, it is just like, it's kind of the new hotness, right? Like, it's what they're pushing. So it doesn't surprise me that they've done it. What surprises and somewhat infuriates me is the messaging, right? Like, I have kind of lambasted GW about this in the past. Their inability to put out consistent messaging, especially when it comes to official events, it's frustrating. I mean, honestly, you know, we all want the game to grow. We all want the game to be the best that it can be. And when they are having trouble even just getting across, like, hey, our events are going to be this, practice this format, or like, hey, we're balancing for this format. Hey, you know, we want people to play Championship. We want people to play Nemesis. Like, it's just inconsistent, and that's frustrating. That said, like, that's my one main nitpick. I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be a good event. Like, I personally like Nemesis. I think there's a lot of cool stuff there. They probably need to hit certain things with an errata that we will talk about when we get to the metagame. I think it's going to be a good time. Madison people come down. They always bring a good entourage, and they're great people to play against. There's a lot of good players around here. Some of my local friends are playing. I'm excited to see how it turns out. And who knows? I mean, if this, I see here today we got a preview of a preview. They said the Las Vegas preview will be Thursday night, and Underworlds will be one of the games previewed at it. So we'll see the next warband and probably hear the name of the next deck. If those get out this month or next, probably not this month because at the end of January already, but if it gets out in February, we'll have a whole new faction to play at Adepticon as well. So I think it'll be a nice mix up, and I'm excited to see what happens with it. Just really want to get on GW's back for, not being consistent with their messaging and, just how they comport themselves in these sort of things when it comes to Underworlds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, I think. I think from what we've been told and from what, people have said, that it seems like Games Workshop is super segmented, very siloed. Mm. So, maybe the messaging comes off a bit unsynergistically, or maybe there's communications or delays. But it is a little frustrating. I think particularly when it comes to Underworlds, there is constant misinformation and constant contradictions. And so I really do hope that that changes. And, it's a new year. Same G-Dub, but hopefully the messaging does improve. I'm really excited. We do know the name of the deck on the preview. I believe it's called Beastbound Assault, which
February 2023. I think that was on an article somewhere. Just going to remember off the top of my
head. Yeah, I'm actually looking at the article right now. I just found it. So that'll be that. And then the Warband, I guess this is going to go out before the LVO preview, which I'll be there for. Mm-hmm. Zach, let me ask you this. I think the two top guesses or speculation are Dark Elves and Bellicor Chaos. What do you think from the two?
I think people are talking Bellicor Chaos.
Because I think they're both
cool.
Yeah. They're both great guesses.
Yeah. I think people are guessing Bellicor Chaos just because the Slaves of Darkness AOS stuff is coming out right now, and there's all that Bellicor, he got a new model a few years ago, now there's like some more mortals devoted to him. And I think we got Bellicor Align Minis was the last Warcry stuff before the new season. So it's like Bellicor's kind of been in and out of the storyline lately. I think people have been digging through the what are the black and white screenshots called? The rumor engine.
Rumor engine, yeah.
Yeah, I think people have been digging through those, and in my opinion, none of them look like mortals of Bellicor worshippers. So I don't think it's that, but elves would be interesting, especially dark elves, because also the rumor with Kill Team is that the next box is going to have Dark Eldar, so it'd be kind of funny to have Dark Elves and Dark Eldar come out at the same time, so I'd be interested in that. I don't know. It has been a while since we got an elf faction, hasn't it? It's been Slithael.
What was the last one? It wasn't too long ago. I guess it's been about a year.
Yeah, that was Nether Maze. So, but considering there's, like, what, in the lore, like, six different elf factions, it's there should be more of them, probably.
Are they all represented? I think they are, right?
We don't have any Cities of Sigmar elves, but, I mean, who knows what's happening with that?
Who knows? Hexbane's was close enough. I mean, we've got Guardians, right? That's the Sylvaneth.
Yeah.
We've got Skates Wild Hunt, which is like Kurenathi. They're not necessarily a single faction in itself yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they might never be, but I would love to see that. Then we got Blade Coven, which I guess is Dark Elves, but it's more like...
It's Daughters of Cain.
Yeah. Is that Dark Elf? Is it not? Who knows? We have this Lumineth, Purifiers. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Soul Raid, which is Idoneth. And we have more Daughters of Cain through the Shadeborn, so... I want to see some Malekith stuff. Malirion is his new name.
Yeah, people have been talking about that as a an Age of Sigmar army for like... It was supposed to be in AOS 2, the second edition, but now we're in the third edition and it's still not here. I mean, at this point, Malekith is... he's the Squats. The AOS version of Squats. Like, eventually it'll come out. Maybe, probably. We got Squats now, but it took like 17 years.
My fear is by the time they come out, I won't be interested because fantasy will be back and I'll just play Batronians or old school Dark Elves and I'll be fine.
Well, have we heard anything about the release box for that? That's still a ways off, right?
No, but the rumors, excuse me, on the interweb are Batronians and Tomb Kings, which make a lot of sense to me.
As the starter set?
Yeah. If that is true.
That's
highest selling box of all time.
Oh yeah. I mean, they'd be crazy not to do something like that, right? I mean, it's like the obvious.
It's just a cash grab.
Yeah.
It's like you want to make millions of dollars in a week. That's what you do. Easy.
Do you think
that would be exciting?
I'm always so curious because like. There's this thought, like, you know, that's the talking point, right? Is like, oh man, if they just brought back Batonians, they would make so much money. If they just brought back Tomb Kings, but like, people weren't buying them when they existed. Like,
I think that's true, but I'll tell you this: what I think now it's a squat thing. No one was buying squats when they went out, right?
That's true.
And now, what are they called?
Not Duarden. Leagues of Votann.
Leagues of Votann. That's right. And now they're like, I feel like I know like every other player plays Leagues of Votann.
Well, they also released them really busted and overpowered, but yes, I get where you're coming from.
True. But that's just also 40k, right?
True. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, look, Bretonians, I feel like have like a cult following. So do Tomb Kings. The thing is, it's all like if you starve a people of something, and then they bring it back, the people will buy it for the sake of novelty itself. That's it. And the minis are going to be sick. Like I mean, the way that the level of quality that Games Workshop produces, because it's going to be like what 25, almost 30 years since the Bretonian range has been updated. Like 2000? Well, no, was it 2005?
I mean, weren't a lot of Bretonians still in plastic or still in metal and resin? Like when they were squatted? No.
Because when Fantasy died 6 months before, or 9 months, maybe like 6 to 8 months before it died, I picked up Bretonians because I was like trying to play with a faction that was weaker, you know, to get better at the game. And then unfortunately it died. But yeah, anyhow, I don't know. But they previewed on the actual website Bretonians, Tomb Kings. Kislev. So yeah.
Yeah.
My money's on one of those three.
Yeah. It'll be cool. I mean, it's only a matter of time, right? Like I think we're starting to see a little bit more and more and more. Like we're starting to see a few more, like at first it was like the original Old World teaser and then like nothing for months. And then now I feel like we're getting them more consistently. Maybe it's just me.
Well, I also think that what's really interesting about the setting is that it's set not in the world that was time period when it died, you know, when we were all playing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's set like 300 years before that. So it's a time period where like all the named characters will be different most likely, except if you're elves because they live forever, right?
Because so right now the Empire is demigods, right? Like Malaria or...
Oh, no.
Teclis and Tyrion and stuff.
Not
like.
Yet.
No?
They just live... Like, the span of an elf is, like, what? 800 years?
probably something
900. Like so, yeah. Like, if you're healthy, so they were alive at the end times, they're alive at this point, most likely. But the Empire is not even the Empire. It's like three or four different elector counts fighting each other to be the Emperor, because the Emperor just died. So,
and this is I'm really hoping Sigmar to see like was hanging around, or it's right after Sigmar died.
No, cause I think Sigmar died a lot. He founded the Empire. So
I'm not this super is like, big on the fantasy lore. Like I really played 40K and then came in with Age of Sigmar. So I'm like, all this is actually like everyone's like, oh, it's coming back. I'm like, it's brand new to me. I didn't play Total War. I didn't play Vermintide. So I'm like, I don't really know any of this stuff.
Yeah, look, I like the Sigmar trilogy. As books are just great reads. I think you should read them if you can get your hands on them.
Sure.
I was like a Warhammer Fantasy lore nut. Still am. It's crazy how you retain this information. It's like when you hear a song after like 5 years, but you can still sing every lyric. It's like that. I know we're supposed to be talking about Underworlds, but this is kind of
yeah, phenomenal, so. We've got a little off there, haven't we?
Yeah. I also heard, speaking of rumors, since we're, you know, when you're in a hole, just keep digging, right?
We're gabbing a little bit.
I heard, we haven't, you know, chit-chatted in a while, but I think with the rumors, again, also, if you listen to Chapter Master of Alrak, which I do, is that the new edition of 40K is coming this summer.
They've been saying that for a bit,
Starter set is like Red Space Marine Blood Angels effectively, but they're like gonna probably not have the iconography on them, so you can paint them however you want. But Blood Angels versus Tyranids, which is very exciting.
Yeah, they've been talking about a Tyranid refresh for a while. They've also been talking about Dark Angels getting an update for a bit, and maybe the line come back, but
yeah, I don't know about that one. Angron came, line's probably gonna come now, because otherwise it's like Gilliman fighting three Primarch demons and probably getting his butt kicked every time. And then
he's trying real hard, man. Give a guy a break.
Yeah, spoilers, but like didn't Mortarion kill him and then the Emperor brought him back to life or something?
It's 40K, man. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he was recently killed during the Plague Wars and then they just brought him back. I don't know.
You bring him back to life once or twice. You can just bring him back as many times as you want.
My thing is, like, if you're going to bring back Gilliman, just bring back Sanguinius.
I think Sanguinius coming back would kind of defeat a lot of the lore for people. Because, like, his death was the impetus for the Emperor then, like, dying afterwards. And, like, he was, like, the heart and soul of the Imperium. And then he died, and now it's corrupted. Like, I think if you bring back Sanguinius, it's a completely different setting. You know, like, I don't know if that's good or not.
I would go nuts. I did hear that they're going to make like the Sanguinar is now like a Primarch level character, because the Sanguinar is like,
he's like him reincarnated or something.
Because, you know, like all the Primarchs have like a warp essence or whatever. So like, I think he is. If you look at, so the way, there's two forms of thought. It's one is that the Emperor like took like nascent warp gods that aren't necessarily bad, and imbued them in the Primarch, which is why a Primarch can never truly die, because the warp entity will exist. And then there's the whole like, well, anyways, that's the main school of thought. So it's
right.
Sanguinius was made of like the Dark Angel and the Light Angel, and if you read the Mephiston book, the Dark Angel has chosen Mephiston to be his avatar. And the Light Angel has picked Dante. So, like, Dante and Mephiston both need to work together to lead the chapter forward, but one cannot overpower the other, because they're in constant battle, if you think about it. Which is kind of cool. So, the Sanguinar, or maybe the Sanguinar is the light version. I don't know. Anyways, back to Warhammer.
Yeah.
Underworlds. Sorry. If you're not into, like, the general Warhammer stuff, my bad, peeps, but...
We're just vibing here, man.
We're just vibing until we have to talk about LVO. And the meta.
And the meta game.
Yeah, well, let's do that. So, I think the fun part about both of us not going to LVO is that we can kind of just get wild with speculation.
Yeah,
true. At the time of my understanding, there had been 20, there was 20 signups. Had you ever signed up or no?
I did originally, and then I changed to Kill Team.
Got it. So, you, me, and Kyle. Kyle also dropped because there's no Best Painted Award. The price support for this event was a little frustrating because it's just a Q1 kit. Mm. So, if you win the whole thing, which is fine, you know, some price support is better than none. I'm not complaining about no price support. I'm just saying, usually Grand Clashes have trophies, right? So, I believe the event is not supported.
It's not
price supported by James Workshop.
No, I don't even think they're running it. I think it's a non GWTO, if I'm not mistaken. Mm.
Got it. Okay, so that is happening, and that's why Kyle pulled out, because he was really more. Kyle loves, you know, we had him on the pod. If you're a frequent listener, and he was going for Best Painted. So, I don't even think he's coming anymore, right? The last time I spoke to him.
I don't know. I know he canceled his ticket. I don't think he was interested in other events. So, I don't know if he's just coming to hang out or if he's just not going to be there.
Yeah, knowing Kyle, if he can't get into any painting classes, he probably won't come.
That means the only person that... classes are all filled up. Yeah.
Okay. So, at this point, the only person that I can think of who's still going is Derek. He's my roommate. I know he's going. So Derek, Captain Murder. And I think we can all probably guess what he's playing. So Derek, if you're listening, you have no excuse. Obviously, anyone can win an event. But now that you're the only person I know playing, I'm rooting for you. And I will give you maximum shit if you don't win.
we expect the world from you, is what we're saying.
Yes, we do. I texted him that the other day, actually. I was like, if you don't win, I will eternally talk shit to you. And he laughed. He was like, fair deal. So I'm just calling you out publicly because I love you. So let's talk about the meta, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
What are your current thoughts and understanding of the meta as a whole? And why don't you set the scene, if you will?
So, the big thing right now is that, one, there's where to begin. So, I think the best place to start is what we know about Championship, what everyone listening to podcasts should know about Championship, which is that it is locked via plot cards. You can only bring one plot card deck in your Championship deck, so we're effectively playing Nemesis Plus. The issue with that, of course, is that that's like most of the cards right now are behind plot walls. Everything from Gnarlwood is behind a plot wall. None of the stuff from Harrowdeep and Nethermaze is, but Harrowdeep and Nethermaze are really heavily around cover hexes, which we don't really have much anymore. So the card pool is, in a lot of ways, very small and limited. So that's one thing, is like the universal set. The second set is the factions. And right now, there's two factions there's three factions. I count Gore Chosen. There's three factions mm-hmm. whose faction decks are just head and shoulders above everybody else. And not just their faction deck, but also their stats. Like, usually, if a faction has really good stats, their cards are not amazing. Or vice versa, they'll be, like, a bunch of mediocre stats, but their cards will be really, really, really good. Gnarl Spirit Pack, Hexbane's Hunters, and Gore Chosen all are just like kind of heads and shoulders above everybody else in both regards. They have really good decks. They have really good fighters. Their fighters synergize with their decks. And then not only that, but they also synergize with the Universal card pool. So these three factions are kind of tearing it up as opposed to everybody else. And the meta's a little bit negative, in my opinion, because of it. For me personally, there's also the fact that a lot of the metagame right now is just, it's very aggro. Everything is very run to the center and fight. Tooth and Claw is hyper aggro. You just want to cross the line and kill people in their territory. Daring Delvers and Fearsome Fortress Fearsome Fortress wants to be on the middle line, and Daring Delvers wants to be not in your territory. So all three of these decks are just like, either get to the middle of the board or get out of your board as fast as humanly possible, and then fight each other. Now, there's a lot to be said about, like, enjoyment of the game, what the design of the game is, what they want the game to be. You know, in the past, clearly they didn't want things like tomes or Cataphrine relics. We had metagames in the past where there were specific decks that just didn't interact with anybody, scored a bunch of glory, never rolled any dice, or didn't care about rolling dice, at least. And you just scored your entire deck, and you scored, you scored way above your opponent without really interacting with them. And that was bad. But I think we've kind of pulled a little bit hard in the other direction, where everything right now is like, you know, there's like non-aggro stuff you can do. You can play like, you can play Mournflight, you can play Dread Pageant, who have two glory hold more, what used to be called dominant position type cards. And you can kind of play them like that, but like the lion's share of the cards and the lion's share of the factions in the game right now is just, it's pure aggro. And then on top of the pure aggro, you have the three good factions in the game, which are also aggro factions and also work well with the current aggro cards and also have good aggro cards of their own. It's just kind of like, it's this avalanche of like, well, one thing is unhealthy and we have this other thing that's unhealthy. And then when you put these two unhealthy things together, it becomes even more unhealthy because they synergize in their unhealthiness and it can feel a little bit bad. I don't think the game is like dead or like dying because of it. It is just, we've had awkward states of the meta in the past. Like I've said, like nobody enjoyed the hyper passive metagames. Nobody enjoyed curse breakers playing wizards in the corner by themselves and just casting magic spells into the ether. Like nobody enjoyed that. So I really hope that GW is like paying attention to this. They see the state that the game is in, and hopefully they pay attention to what happens at LVO. They see what that metagame looks like and they go, oh, this is unhealthy. And then they do something about it. So that's kind of like the short version of what's going on in the metagame. And it's one of the reason that like I'm a little bit burnt out right now, you know, during my, Vassal League run in the last league, I just played a bunch of, Gnarl Spirit Pack back-to-back. And I played a bunch of Tooth and Claw and Nemesis games back-to-back, and I was like, oh, this is not really why I enjoy the game. And it was a little bit disheartening. So, yeah. It's not like an unrecoverable position, but it's not the position I want Underworlds to be in at the moment. Hopefully that wasn't too negative.
No, I don't think it's negative. I guess opinions can be negative, but ultimately, like, that is a decent summary of the current meta game, right? I mean, yes, you added your own personal feelings in there, but ultimately, like, the game is dominated right now by... I would also add in Headcracker's Mad Mob, but you did say Hexbane's Hunters, Gnarl Spirit Pack, and Gore Chosen of Drom. I would say Mad Mob are in there.
They've snuck themselves in, yeah.
I just think they're very good at tanking damage, which is what those three outwar bands are really good at doing, right? So they kind of naturally jump in there. They also have that offensive output as well.
They also have, like, Mad Mob doesn't feel as big of a issue to me because, like I said, factions usually have either good stats or a good deck. Mad Mob actually have a really good deck. They just have, like, kind of mediocre stats. Like, Toofdag is really scary once he gets rolling, but everyone else is kind of like... Headsplitta, it's the guy with the big axe. I think it's Headsplitta. He's like okay.
Wallop the Skull.
Wallop the Skull, thank you. Wallop the Skull, he's like okay. He's a good fighter. Dacko kind of sucks. Headcracker himself is like, he's alright. He's like a solid wizard, but like none of them are problematic stat wise in the way that the other factions, I think, are.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know if Gore Chosen are part of that conversation, to me, personally. And I would also say that maybe... Well, it's... I don't know. The thing with Gore Chosen is that there's a heavy reliance on the leader.
Hmm.
The leader And then the big guy, he's not accurate, right? So I think there are some trade-offs there. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that maybe I don't agree.
Sure. And what's strong or too strong is kind of subjective. So, yeah, it's you don't have to agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, but the overall point is, like, I do think that the consistency and power output of particularly two factions, in my opinion, and we can, and Gorechosen could be a third, but number one and two, I guess, change Hexbanes and Gnarl Spirit.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit egregious at this point. It's a bit strong. And I think that leads into the meta conversation, right? Like, I think if you want to win LVO, you play one of those two, is my personal opinion. If someone was like, hey, I'm on, I want to go win any event, Zach, I'm sure you'd give the same advice. Play one of those two warbands. Mm-hmm. And that's not even like a groundbreaking thought process, right? Like, that's just, you could ask anybody who's put paid semi attention to the game. What I think is interesting is, in addition to Gorechosen and Mad Mob, what I really wanted to explore is, what other factions do you think have a shot in the realm of those four warbands?
I think so. A couple that have jumped out at me. We've talked about the game being very aggro-y. I think there's only a couple factions that can really, if you don't want to play aggro and you still want to hang with the big boys, I think there's only a couple factions that can really do it. I think one is Lady Harrows, because they also have a really strong deck, and two dice defense can sometimes just get you there. I mean, sometimes you could just roll crits and not die, and that's cool. They also just have really good objectives. They have a lot of pushes. You know, they actually work really well with Daring Delvers. I think they're extremely strong with that deck. So that's one. I think Purifiers, like, I've had a Purifier player play into me a couple times. They're, like, sneakily still really fucking solid. Like, not in any particular, like, oh, you know, they do this, and it's really scary, but it's just like, wow, they just kind of do stuff at all stages of the game, and their faction deck is good. It's not like standout, crazy, scary. It's just like, it's good. It's solid. Solid all the way through. I don't know if they work particularly well with any of the plot decks right now. Maybe Fearsome Fortress, just because you have so much two defense dice. But
I would say Daring Delvers, because of the ping damage.
I don't know if they're fast enough to.
There's a card in there.
If you don't care as much about, like, the exploration stuff, which I guess you don't need to, but if you only care about the power stuff, then yeah, I'm sure they could do pretty well with it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea would be, you know, Bonar survives at least into the, like, mid to late game.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you have your leader deal the ping damage. I think Purifiers is always my dark horse. I've been saying that since before our Adepticon, where we met and played.
Yeah, because
Davey played them to great six.
It was Davey, yeah. I knew it was one of the Mortal Realms guys.
Yeah. And he even said, like, you know, because I think we did an episode, and we were talking about, like, dark horses and something, and I think Purifiers came up, and he was like, yeah, you know, listen to that podcast. I was like, maybe there's something to go with it. And he tried it, and it worked, and he made it work really well. All 100% all credit goes to him. But it's just consistently, like, I think Purifiers have game. And in a warband where, in a meta, rather, where you're trying to survive an onslaught, sometimes that reroll on defense really helps.
Yeah, and I think Bahanar being on two block, your leader's on two dodge to start. That's we all know how good two dodge is.
Yeah, it's super nice. And I think the ping damage can add up. They have faction ping. They have there's that surge, you get two glory for killing someone with ping. I mean, there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, and not only that, but their faction upgrades are really good. Like, they've got reduced damage by one, they've got plus move, like, they've just got a bunch of solid things to go around. So yeah, I think that's a solid pick for a dark horse.
Yeah, I want to go back to Mournflight. Do you feel like Mournflight just getting mowed over?
It can. I mean, it's dice. I think dice being equal, like, you play out your best of three, you just play to your outs and stuff, I think Mournflight do fine. But yeah, I mean, you do start with 2 wound, 3 wound, 3 wound, 4 wound. Like, Kaithi can just get sniped by basically anything. Your two mid-size ladies can just get smoked by basically anything if you roll badly. I mean, you are just relying on two dodges, and there's not that much cover in the game anymore. So it's not, like, amazing, but, you know, it's also not terrible. I think for them, it's really more just their cards are really good, you know? Like, I wouldn't rely on them to be like, I'm not just going to, like, yeet them into the middle of Gnarl Spear Pack and be like, I'm invincible. Yeah, like, that's just not going to happen. But I think if you play smart with their cards and play towards, you know, a more hands-off, flex-style gameplay approach, I think they can still do pretty well.
That is interesting. I agree that their deck is strong. I wonder if it's... okay, so, like, if we look at, like, the average game, best 2 out of 3, right? Do you think that the 2 dodge stacks up to, like, because, like, again, the problem, right, is, like, when you're trying to plan for any of this stuff, like, I think Mournflight into Hexbanes is still favored into Hexbanes, but I think there's more of a game there. When you have, like, Scything 4 or 5 dice attacks, what does that do? Do you just die?
But you're 4 models. You don't have to clump up as much as other factions. I mean, you can deploy pretty spread out. Kira can maybe reach 2 of them, but then you're getting supports. You can use boards where there's blocked hexes to keep her from getting 2 hits at once. You ignore blocked hexes because you're ghosts. And then, you know, if Kira comes in and just smokes, you know, she's also only doing 2 damage when she's beast mode. If she crits, she's 1 damage. I mean, that is really scary when you're a chump warband, but they're not really a chump warband. Like, yeah, she can one-shot Widow Kaitha, but you just chuck Kaitha in the back and you present 2 3 wound dudes, and okay, maybe she chunks one or both of them down, but now you've got a game ahead of you, I think, and you can just kill her because she's there. I don't think it's that bad, honestly.
Right on.
Or at least it's not as bad as other factions.
That's true. And that's the crux, right? Is like, it's just sad that you have to say when, at least compared to other factions, it's not as bad, right? I think that's kind of the feels bad from that statement. I do think it's, I think another thing that might
this is not me going
Warband is also.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is not me going, Mournflight is going to, like, you know, they're sneakily S tier. They're going to take everything over. It's like, what's top of A tier that can hang with these factions? Maybe these guys. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I don't think you're saying Mournflight might win, but I completely agree. I'm just, because we're on this topic, I'm just wondering if Gnarl Spear just moved too quickly. I think, is that, like, can you hide Kaitha? Is it possible?
I think that's the thing as well, is, like, Mournflight generally win and die by their mobility over everybody else. Your 4 move with fly, you're eventually 5 move with fly when they inspire. You have multiple plus move in the deck. And against a lot of factions, that speed is top tier. But not against Gnarl Spirit. It's merely keeping up against Gnarl Spirit.
Yeah. There was a couple other warbands I was thinking about. Because at one point I was thinking about playing in the Warhammer Underworlds event. And I was thinking, well, I know Derek's playing Gnarl Spirit. I know probably a bunch of other people are playing Hexbanes and Gnarl Spirit. Like, what can I do to play into that? And I didn't think Hexbanes was the answer, right? I think I didn't want to play a game where it was a dice off. And I was exploring a bunch of warbands. I looked at Purifier as we talked about them. I looked at Soul Raid. I think they still lose the fight, if you will. I looked at Profiteers, and I don't think they get online quickly enough. You have thoughts on one of those two?
I think Soul Raid don't win the fight, but I think Soul Raid get to dictate the battlefield more, which is not winning, but it's not losing either. I think they're more even, at least.
For that's whatever fair. It's
worth. Again,
yeah, didn't work.
It's a little bit like Mournflight, where it's like, I think Soul Raid can do okay in the right situation if the dice don't completely screw you over, but they're not, like, favored, so to speak.
Yeah. I guess all I was looking for was playing a warband that would give me a fighting chance, like a fair fight.
Right. Yeah, I get that.
Long story short, I don't think I found it outside of the usual suspects. Like, I tried to explore the destruction faction, the Grand Alliance, a little bit. I think Rippas lose the battle of attrition. I think Crushas have a lot of wounds, but the movement hurts, right? And then with Cunning Crew, your three fighters just die. It was really funny when I tried the game. They exploded. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of it. Cunning Crew, you're really looking to get early good illusion draws and then power up your leader. And I just don't think it's fast enough. I think...
Yeah.
What a lot of people understand, and I think if you're curious about why we think these factions are so good, Gnarl Spirit's biggest issue in their power level is how strong they are turn one. They don't need any time to become uber powerful. They're there from turn one. Like, they're at their peak almost. Not necessarily, because I haven't drawn plus one damages and rerolls and stuff, but, like, they're pretty close to their peak on turn one. Whereas a lot of other factions, like, it takes an entire round to get inspired. It takes, you know, you require certain upgrades to get to where you need to be. You require certain tokens or, you know, counter stacks to get to a certain point if you're playing, like, Crimson Court or something. So when we talk about factions being too slow or not getting online enough, you know, that's a big thing. And Hexbane as well, I don't think Hexbane are as scary in turn one, but they also don't diminish in power, and they just kind of, I don't know, they've just got too many weird shit going for them. Is the easiest way to say it. Yeah, I can't really think of any that are just like, are durable enough on turn one to stick around, or are violent enough on turn one to punch back. Like, maybe Hrothgorn? Like, maybe there's something in Mantrappers where you put Hrothgorn up front, he tanks a couple hits, and then solos the warband by himself, but I don't even think he's on two dice for his entire first round until he gets inspired, and that's just not good enough.
Yeah, and he has to get the kill to inspire. It's really interesting because, like, And the thing is you don't want to overcommit into the GSP matchup, because you also need to be able to beat Hexbanes, right? Which is a little different. They have different strengths. And then let's say you totally tech into those two. And then let's say you play a Mournflight. Then you're SOL, right? Like, then so you can't overcommit. I think that's the hardest part. He's like, if I knew I was just going to play six Gnarlspat in a row, I could probably figure it out, right? But you're not, because there's going to be people like Tim, right? Who just shows up with Guardians with some list that you may have not be seen or familiar with, and they can take you. And that's kind of where I kind of have that trepidation, is that I can't overcommit. So then I thought about Wurmspat, but I'm like, they're too slow. You know, like, they can tank. I had a couple games where they were able to block the damage to one or two. And you can kind of survive until Sepsimus or Golgrotch gets online. But Fecula is the weak link there, right? She gets killed pretty quick, and then you lose out on some of your ping damage.
A lot of it,
yeah. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll try something out of the woodworks. I started experimenting with warbands that can just come back and just load up some weapons, try to kill people. I tried the whole Black Hunger Skaven thing. I thought I had like struck gold at one point, and then you just kill Scritch. You can't save Scritch. It's very hard to keep him alive, right? And then, so the moment Scritch dies, you kind of lose out on that game plan. And then I tried Grimwatch. Those were kind of close, but you just give up too many bodies and you never inspire, right? So.
Yeah, it's interesting because I, as someone who plays a lot of res warbands, Grimwatch, Sepulchral Guard, Scritch, and then recently Exiled Dead, like these have all been kind of my mainstay factions. There's always an amount of glory bleed inbuilt, right? You're always expecting to be like, okay, I have to score this much more than my opponent because I'm giving up this much more glory. And I don't think that's really I don't think the amount that you give up right now is really an issue. Like, I don't think that it's a bad thing that Grimwatch are dying more than Gnarl Spear Pack. That's kind of the way it's designed. But there's no cards in the metagame right now that reward that style of play. Like, in the past we had, like, you know, Temporary Victory and Dug In and, like, these big high, and, like, Keys and, you know, these big high scoring or, like, extra end game scoring things that would reward you for being like, okay, I'm going to bleed glory now, but I'm going to get glory later because I can res and I can res onto objectives and I can spread across the board and I can, you know, position and let myself die, but then taking up another position over here where they can't reach me. And the glory ceilings are so low. I mean, even in Championship right now, I don't think people are really topping out much more over 17, 18. Like, my Grimwatch decks used to run 22 glory and plus stuff in, you know, like keys and stuff in upgrades. And we're just not hitting those numbers anymore. And maybe that's healthier for the game in some respects, but it does mean that those factions are just not going to be able to keep up. I truly think that.
Yeah, I agree. And ultimately, I kept finding myself gravitating back to those top four that we discussed earlier, which was GSP, Hexbanes, Mad Mob, and Forechosen. But the GSP mirror is just a dice off.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? So it's like, why am I even playing that? That's not... Why would I travel across the continent
to play what? Craft.
To just road through... Exactly. Like, I'm in Vegas. It's not... Sure, I guess there's a sort of thematicism going, right? But it's not... It is not worth it to me. And the same thing felt with Hexbane. It's like, you know, at that point, you're both playing pure carnage. It's just whoever kills the other guy first, right? And it's... Mm-hmm. And in the Hexbane matchup, it was like, can I kill Kira before she kills three of my fighters?
Generally not.
And... Yeah, yeah, generally not, because you have the... It's not Dark Command. It's the one where, like, one of the cool things you can do with GSP is you can charge, and as long as you make sure that charge is four hexes away from maybe Gorl, right, who's your frontline fighter, you can charge and then pull your fighter back. So you're no longer in threat. And then you have to charge into Kira if you want to kill her, but then Gorl is there, and then that means now you're in charge of Lupin and Sarakar, and it's just like, It's really good. It's really good the way that strategy works, but it's frustrating at times because it feels like you can't take advantage of a potentially poor dice roll. With Gore Chosen, I think that one is more interesting. And you can technically say that any game is a dice off, right? But
well,
I packed a bunch of heal in there. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. What are you going to say to that?
I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been playing a lot of Blood Bowl recently. And Blood Bowl, if you're unaware, Blood Bowl is a very dicey game. That is a game that lives and dies by dice roll. And you can be the best player in the world. You just roll skulls and you lose. Like, it is much more RNG than any of the other GW offerings. When people say, oh yeah, you can just get good dice. Or like, it could just be bad dice. You know, like, that's one thing, but like, it's hard to say that without talking about the actual the actual like game that's around that dice, right? Like, it's not just that GSP players roll more dice, therefore they have a better chance to win, or like, you know, they have a better chance to crit, or they have a better chance to save, whatever. It's that they're rolling more dice, and also their deck is doing things, and also their stats are better outside the dice. So yeah, I mean, you could rock up with Yulthari's Guardians, roll crits, and your opponent rolls no crits, and you can just win the game, but like, it doesn't really say anything about the state of the game, and I don't even really think it's worth, like, I mean, you can talk about, like, oh, my dice rolls were bad, that's why I lost this best of three, but it's like, did that really mean anything in the grand scheme of things? It's just so hard to talk about, you know?
I don't disagree. I think the interesting thing about events is that consistency matters, because you can have one good game, you can have one good match, right? You can dice your opponent two games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it happens. It's happened to me. I've done it to people. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
But can you do that the whole tournament? It's hard, right?
It's hard. And especially when one faction just has superior dice, superior statistical likelihoods of outcome compared to other factions. We always say things like lies, dirty lies, and statistics, which is kind of the rallying cry of war gamers everywhere. But it's true, you know? It's like, you can, yes, the dice will sometimes, your guaranteed hit will miss, and your long shot chance to succeed will happen and you'll win. But those are outliers, and we only remember them because they're outliers. Like, GSP have a statistical advantage in basically all aspects, both across cards and attacks and defense, and that is really problematic to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of the overarching theme here, was that they're the boogeyman. And look, if you want to win an event, you should take them, right? Because that'll get you the dub.
Absolutely.
Most likely, you know, unless Tim Lemon shows up. But I think that's kind of one of the reasons why I decided to pull out of the Grand Clash event. I'm playing in the Nemesis event. I think that'll be fun. I'll just put them Jang together.
Nice.
But it's just that I don't want to deal with that. You know, like, even with the Foul Temper Molog era, sometimes you just didn't draw Foul. What was it? The heal, not Foul Temper.
I don't remember what it was called.
The crazy heal.
The heal, the more upgrades you had, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes he didn't draw it, right? And it feels good, because then you're like, I have a game. But you can't not draw your base stats. So
yeah.
That's
all.
That's the meta. And so I think we can both agree that we think one of those four warbands will win. Zach, if you had to pick one warband, it sounded like you picked Hexvanes. Is that who your money's on?
Yes. I think GSP and Hexvanes are the top ones. I think Hexvanes have a higher ceiling for people who are really good with them. I think I'm going to be a little blithe about players that I have never interacted with before. I think a lot of people will gravitate towards GSP because they're easier to play. It's easier to pick up. They synergize with Tooth and Claw very well. You just kind of pick up the Narrow Spear box and the Essentials pack, and you can build the best GSP deck there is. But I think if you put a lot of hours in and you understand the matchup really well, I think Hexblade Hunter is a better warband overall. So I think there will be somebody who just like comes out and is like, yeah, I practiced the shit out of this, and they just like win it with Hexbanes. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't know what people are doing nowadays. Maybe people are just really practicing crushes or something weird.
Yeah, I feel like I wanted to be that Hexbanes player, but I gave up. Like, because
it's not giving up, it's reprioritizing. Don't sell yourself short. It's okay.
That's fair. Yeah, I just started enjoying other things. But yeah, my money's on GSP. It wouldn't be a Path to Glory episode, though, if we didn't speculate about what we would do to change things. And so, if you could influence Afar, Zach, a Forsaken and Restricted list, and let's say someone was like, hey, man, go wild, solve the meta. What are you doing?
How wild can I go?
Let's put some limitations on this, shall we? Let us say that you know Erratus. Only restrictions, you can only restrict and forsake cards. You cannot buff or nerf any fighter cards or warband mechanics. And let's say if you do restrict faction cards, you can only do 3, no more.
I've talked about this for a while online, and if you are in any of the Discords I'm in, you've seen me talk about this. I think there should be a... GW will never do this. This is too complex, and they also already don't give Underworlds the attention it needs from a maintenance standpoint. I think there should be a Forsaken and Restricted list for each faction. I think certain cards should be restricted for X faction and not for Y faction. I think GSP should get a bunch of cards, universal cards restricted, and I think those should be completely unrestricted for factions like Sons of Elmorn, and they should just be able to take all the bullshit cards they want. If I was in charge of it, that's exactly what I would do. So, like, you know, Sons of Elmorn can take 6 pink cards in a deck. Gnarl Spear Pack can't take anything. They can just take Sidestep. They just get 7, you know, 21 cards restricted. Like, you know, not to that extreme, but to get the point across of what I'm trying to say. That, short of that, though, because I know they're never going to do that, I think they just need to lift the plot restriction to open up the metagame a little bit. And this is from a championship perspective. Obviously, Adepticon is going to be Nemesis. I don't know how you fix that. It doesn't have a far list. They need to do something about it. But I think you need to remove the plot restriction. And I think you just need to be smart about restricting pings. But realistically, what I think they need to do is open up objectives. Because every deck has some good flex objectives. And I think if you had all of those available to each other, I think you would see other factions kind of do better. Because right now it's kind of like, if you're not just doing aggro with the aggro cards and the aggro deck, and you're an aggro warband, if you're not doing that, you're kind of not playing the game. I think opening up the options of all the Gnarlwood universals, allowing people to build more flexible decks that don't rely on outfighting Gnarl Spirit Pack, which is not a thing you can really do right now, and just like giving them that option, that would be great. And then just restrict what would I restrict from Gnarl Spirit? God, they have so much good stuff. I don't even know what you're restricting. I'd hit their Great Fortitude and their Great Strength just because it's too good to have that redundancy. Don't they have like a ploy that gives you rerolls, something like that? They give you.
Do have a ploy that does that.
I just pick 3 of their best cards and restrict all of them. I don't even know what you do with Hexbane. Their strong part is their mechanic. I think Hexbane does fine even if you restrict 3 of their best cards right now. It's really hard to say. I mean, you gave me the limitation of not doing errata. I think you need to do erratas to bring these factions in line. And short of that, you need to put out a special thing being like, Hexbane's Hunters can only bring 1 restricted card and everyone else can bring 3. I think that's how you do it.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty wild. And I should have put more limitations.
but you can't put limitations on, but like I said, I think realistically you can't just be like, oh, if you restrict these 3 cards,
the game is fine. Like, I just don't think we're at that point. I think you need something more extreme. Otherwise, it's just not going to settle itself.
Yeah, that's fair. There's a lot that you said that I want to cover. I'll try to respond with the easy stuff first. For Hexbane Restricted, I think it's really easy. You just pick Charmed Horseshoe and Proof of Guilt. Those are probably their two most powerful and ubiquitous cards. I think Proof of Guilt is just nuts also because it just has three different score conditions.
Well, yeah.
That's pretty nice. That's
fair.
And I think Charmed Horseshoe, especially because it's just a blanket plus one, no range limitation. And continuing the trend on accuracy, I think you just hit all accuracy in the game, period. I think Ferocious Bite needs to be restricted, or no, Forsaken, because it's stupid, with Gnarl Spirit. And Exile Dead, which...
But that...
It is what it is. I see you.
Oh, no. I don't care about the Exile Dead. Like, they've been... I've had my fun with them. If they get nerfed now, it's fine. We've talked about this before, and this has been a thing that's come up in the various Discords, is that you can just be like, oh, restrict all the accuracy cards in the game, but you're not just hurting Gnarl Spirit. You're not just hurting Hexbane. You're hurting all the A and B tier teams. Like... It's not that we're bringing S tier down to A tier. Now we're just bringing S tier down to A tier and A tier down to B tier. And, like, I just don't think you're actually changing the state of the game.
Well, I would agree and disagree, right? I think there is a case of, like, a reshuffling or a re-tiering and that everything goes down. But I also think that the gap between the tiers, if you will, is reduced to a certain extent. I mean, the lower ranks maybe suffer the most. But, like, if you restrict Ferocious Bite from the game, like, who's benefiting it from the most, right? As maybe Exile Dead suffers, but now GSP aren't getting plus two dice blanket on all their attacks, right? Whereas for everyone else, it was just plus one. You can find an alternative for plus one. GSP could find an alternative for plus one, but it's no longer plus two, right? That's kind of where I'm at, is that... And even Lurking Horror, you know, screw that card too. Like, it's just, like, I just don't think we need that much accuracy in this game. And if you can remove both those, I think GSP suffer more than the others. Because the others are working with less anyways. They're used to that.
I disagree only because you can take those away, but most factions then are just on two dice or three swords. Gnarl Spirit is still on three hammers and four swords on a lot of their stuff. Like, you take away all the you take away all the extra stuff, and Gnarl Spirit still have better stats than everybody else.
Sure, but as you say, if you hit their great strength and you hit their great fortitude and you hit probably their best surge, then in addition to those two card. I would say forsake both those accuracy cards, right? First is by Lurking Horror, then what happens? Then I think Gnarl Spirit are more in line. They Maybe. Might throw a lot of dice. They might not hit as hard. They might not be able to tank as much damage. And I agree. You said something about ping damage. Let's hit all the ping damage. It's too much.
It's too
much. It's excessive.
No, you know, I think we're like 90% on the same page. I worry that that type of change is just not enough. I'm usually the one advocating for, like, you know, a smaller, lighter touch, like, oh, let's not go overboard. We just should hit a couple cards. But, like, I think we're at the point where we've seen the meta and we're like, the light touch is just not going to do it. But I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just overreacting.
I don't think it's an overreaction. I think it's a little bit of, like, something needs to be done. Nothing has been done. So there's frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you stew on something a lot and you have to suffer from something or against something quite a bit, in this case, then the current warbands that are dominating the meta, then over time, your approach will be more hard-handed, right? Because you're just so fed up. So I think there's a bit of exhaustion associated with that as well, which can lead to perhaps dealing out or meting out a sterner judgment. I don't disagree with you, though. Like, I think what you did or what I say could probably work, and it would be fine, or at least improve. Which just sucks, because, like, it's nice to see a Chaos Warband do well. But
yeah,
it's doing really well. And I never thought I'd ever say this, but buff Sons of Elmorn, please.
Yeah, when was the last time
they're too cool to suck.
They haven't been out long enough to really warrant this, but I would almost say buff Lunecourt as well. I think Lunecourt were released at not a great place either.
It's really interesting, because if you isolate Velmorn and Lunecourt in a bubble, they do fairly well against one another.
Oh, yeah.
You throw in, I don't know, most warbands, and it's probably unfavored for them, but they still kind of play.
Yeah, I think.
And then you throw in GSP, and it's like,
it only feels bad because they both are kind of like maybe low B tier, mid B tier, like, and tiers are like really subjective. But they're like a solid middle of the pack team, both of them. But like now the pack is, we're closing in on 50 warbands, and they also released alongside the strongest team in the game. So it doesn't feel like they're a middle of the pack warband all of a sudden.
Yeah. It's really interesting, man. Well, I'm sure something will be done, and I hope it's soon. It doesn't look like it's going to happen before LVO. So if you are a big GSP fan, boy or girl, or fan person, then enjoy it. And I hope your days are numbered.
We're not mean. We're just angry.
I would even accept salty at this point. I'm okay being a little salt man.
Salty, not quite brined yet. Just slightly salted.
Yeah, I would say I would say the longer you let me stew, the longer you might add too much salt, if you will. So,
my wife and I have various levels now. It's like salty, and then it's brined, and then we're like pickled, and then eventually it's just like fermented. Just so past salty, it's just like, you're done. I'm not there yet.
You turn into alcohol.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, before we get into any more salty analogies, it's probably a good time to summarize and then wrap things up. So,
yeah.
Zach, summarize on what you think we think will dominate the LVO meta. And what warbands have a chance into playing against the top four that we elected?
I think it's pretty clear that we're both on the same page about Hexbane, GSP being the top two, Gorechosen being up there, Mad Mob probably being up there. There's a couple dark horses, like we said. Don't need to go into it again, but you know, I think there's definitely a chance for somebody to come out with something that they've honed and practiced and built and just kind of take the meta away. I don't think that discounts the strength of the things in the meta, just that it can't happen. But yeah, I expect to see one of those four warbands probably running Tooth and Claw as their plot deck. You know, just a lot of rolling dice in the middle of the table. I think that's really what we can expect to see.
I like it. It's a good summary. And yeah, if best of luck to all of those who are competing in events. There's a ton of events coming this year, a super exciting time. But for those of you competing in the near term, best of luck. And whether you're playing with or against any of the warbands aforementioned today, just know that if you put in the work, you put in the effort, you practice your matchups, and you get some good rolls and some good draws, you too can win any event, really. Just need a little bit of luck.
Absolutely.
And with that, I think we're going to wrap up our first episode of 2023, which honestly, I really enjoyed. I just really enjoyed chit-chatting the first time. It's like 45 minutes.
It's been a while just to catch up and talk about games and stuff, man. So it was nice. Yeah. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Me too. And if you hated it, let us know. And we won't do that. But
we'll be super serious from now on if you're really bored with us.
Not even bored, but it's more like if you tune in just for Underworlds, we can get to that quicker. It's just there was a lot on our minds.
Yeah. So that's fair.
Also, one more thing before we go. I wanted to actually thank everybody for being supporters of this podcast. I shared the information with Zach, and we were absolutely blown away by the sheer success that we had in 2022. It was honestly incredible that we jumped so much. And, you know, 2022 felt like a year in which Underworlds was waxing and waning, and more so waning. But then we look at the stats and the numbers, and we had a hell of a year, man. We had 31 episodes in 2022. We had almost 4,000 minutes recorded that we produced. We were listened to 28 countries, and we gained 55% more followers than the previous year, which is incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And this is the craziest stat to me. We were in the top 10 most followed podcasts on Spotify.
Really?
Yeah. And like, if you really think about it, there's a shit ton of podcasts out there, right?
There are a lot of podcasts out there.
So like being in the top 10% may not be like an elite club. Like if you're in top 5 or 4 or 3, especially 1, absolutely. But still, being in the top 10% of all the podcasts out there is incredible. It's great.
It's a big number, man.
Yeah, for two dudes.
Two dudes talking about a very niche game that like very few people play. Like, I mean, you know, we talk about growing the community and the actual, you know, count of people playing it, but like ultimately Warhammer's like a nerd shit. Like not a lot of people played in the big numbers, right? So that's crazy to me.
Yeah. I was shocked, like my jaw dropped when I did the stuff. Another cool fact was that I mentioned 28 countries. So the top 5 countries where our listeners reside, number 1, UK. Awesome. Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2 was super surprising. I thought it was going to be the US, but it was actually Germany.
Ah, a lot of Euros in our chat right now. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool. The US came in at 3rd, which was great. And then we got Sweden, and the Netherlands in 4th and 5th. Can you believe that?
It's weird, because like, I'm not surprised people in various countries listen or play the game, right? I'm just like, I'm trying to think of who in like the like in our discords are from these countries, because I'm like, okay, Germany. I know some people in the Vassal Discord from Germany. Like, yeah, absolutely. I can probably identify a couple of them. But then I'm like, I don't know any of them from Finland. Like, are they just lurking in that Discord? Are they just not in the Discord and they're just looking for Underworlds content and they came across us? That's, I don't know. The world may never know, huh?
Yeah, it's really interesting because like there are some people in our Discord who are like, yeah, I don't play the game, but I'm still a patron and because I just like listening to you guys, you know, which is really sweet to hear. We were talking about that the other day. Yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's amazing. Like, even like Craig, you know, from Australia, he's like, I'm still a patron. I listen to every episode. I don't play the game anymore. And I'm like,
bless you, man.
Bless you, indeed. A couple more stats here. Can you guess our most popular episode of the year?
Did we do a meta list or like a tier list last year? I feel like tier lists are always really popular.
We haven't done a tier list yet. We will. But it was not the tier list episode. Number one episode. It was a Warband review episode. Can you guess which Warband?
Exiled Dead. No, not my favorite.
As much as I would love I would love to give you that satisfaction. I'm sorry. It was Hexbane's Hunters.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. People love that faction, man. And for good reason.
Yeah. Yeah. It had 342% more streams than our average episode.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's like crazy.
Yeah, we literally tripled our listener count on that one. Crazy. 3.5x that. So.
Well, I'm glad you guys are enjoying it. I mean, it warms my heart. I mean, you know, this is just two dudes from middle America, you know, talking about a game that we love. And I'm glad to see not only support, but awesome international support and people coming into our Discord and people posting on socials. I mean, I try not to care too much about social media because I think it's can be really bad for mental health. But I'm glad to see people using it. I'm glad to see it reaching out to people and, you know, just getting to people across the world. It really warms my heart. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been a extremely amazing. Not necessarily validation, but just like, you know, you guys are fighting the good fight. Keep going, you know, and it just felt awesome. And the last stat, which certainly is not the least, is our podcast has scored 4.9 out of 5. So,
yeah,
that's incredible. So, super, super thank you to everyone who has listened to us, supported us. And our podcast really blew up in the year 2022. And we really hope to continue that momentum and hopefully exceed the goals that we hit and set in 2022. I'm just so excited and I can't wait to see where we go as a podcast because, you know, in that year we expanded to Kill Team and Warcry. Again, it was only like maybe 5 or 6 episodes, but that may have opened up a new audience for us, right? And maybe have made help more people get interested in the game. So I know I'm talking a lot, and Zach, I'd love to have you throw in some thoughts here, but I'm just so excited. It's awesome.
I am too. And, you know, I think to your point about Kill Team and Cry, and, you know, you're talking a lot about MCP. I know we are an Underworlds podcast first and foremost, but, you know, we do love all games, especially a lot of these skirmish games. And, if there's ever one that you want to hear more about, any one that you're interested in hearing, or like you want to see us just do like a 30-minute review of in the middle of another episode where, you know, we're like we had today, where we're just shit talking and, you know, shooting the shit. And you were like, hey, man, why don't you talk about MCP and what's going on there? Why don't you talk about Ice and Fire or, you know, whatever other new thing is coming out in the next year or so? That could be cool in the pipeline. I think we'd love to do that. I think we'd love to interact with our community. I know you're here for Underworlds, a lot of you, but I mean, people listen to podcasts for all sorts of reasons, right? So if you want to listen to us blabber about something else, just let us know.
Well said. And one game that I'm very keen on coming up is Star Wars Shatterpoint. So we'll see.
It looks pretty cool. I think we have a shared love of Star Wars.
That's right. So, I especially the Clone Wars. I'm a big Darth Maul fan boy. So,
did you watch the cartoon? We're going to get on a tangent. Never mind. Ignore what I said.
We will continue this episode or this conversation on Discord.
Yeah.
But cool.
Of course.
All right. Thank you again for everyone who supports us, and we'll close things out. Right on. Well, once again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathofglory. You can find all of our blog content on pathofglorypodcast.com. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at our Path to Glory podcast server. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. 5-star ratings help. And as always, thanks for listening. And we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.